Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about D.C.'s homeless problem. And my guests are Courtney Snowden. She is D.C.'s deputy mayor for greater economic opportunity. And Laura Zeilinger, director of the Department of Human Services. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Gus, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Gus. What's on your mind?
But here's my thing, though. You know, I was talking about this, and I work for a nonprofit agency up here in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Who puts themselves in that position to be homeless?
Ms. Zeilinger, I spoke to that earlier. Certainly, I'm sure you would like to speak to the economic issue.
Yeah, so I think we are facing a reality where the affordable housing supply is shrinking and wages have not kept pace with the cost of housing. And so it is oftentimes just purely a budgeting issue. It's not that people aren't trying their hardest and doing their best, but at times they have been priced out of the market and they need some support. Not everybody, unfortunately, has the family and social networks to help them through those tough times. People in who are lucky enough to be more resourced oftentimes also have networks that when they fall in tough times, they don't fall into homelessness. They're able to access help. But for folks who don't, they're looking to the government. We want to be able to provide that safety net. And we do. So I think it's just non-accurate assumption that somebody has done something wrong to find themselves in this situation.
Gus, thank you so much for your phone call. Legrette, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I wanted to ask. I'm homeless with two children, and my son has Alzheimer's, and I'm an amputee. And I wanted to get one of them ladies' numbers so somebody could help me.
So are you currently in a receiving homeless services?
No, I sleep in a truck.
You sleep in a truck. And where do you live? Where is your truck? Where are you generally staying?
Well, my son was staying with my daughter, but she wanted him out of her house.
So if you're in Washington, D.C., you could...
I live in Washington, D.C., born and raised here.
Okay, so you would call 311 and ask for the shelter hotline, and they
can
connect you, or you can come into the Virginia Williams Family Resource Center at 910 Rhode Island Avenue.
Rhode Island Avenue?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And although I'm 59 years old and my son's 21, he's got Alzheimer's, and I have a daughter named Giovanni Copeland, too.
Okay, so I just encourage you to come visit us, and we'll see what we can do to support you.
Okay,
Legrette, thank you so much for your phone call. You were about to say something, Ms. Snowden.
I was. So I just want to piggyback on this discussion about the economics of it. We recognize as we built this workforce system and begun to drop unemployment in the District of Columbia, which we're incredibly proud of, by more than 2 percentage points across the city, and even more in Ward 7 and Ward 8, that it's also important that when people get connected to employment, that they're also educated about how to use, spend, and rely on money as a tool to take care of their lives, to sustain themselves, and to plan for their future. So we launched just a few months ago a website called Financially Fit, DC financiallyfit.org, .gov, I'm sorry. It allows residents to connect to the website, to develop a financial fitness plan, and to get clear about their goals. The reason why we did that is because we realize we have a city that is becoming more and more expensive. We're building affordable housing and investing in it like no other, but we want to make sure that families are able to effectively sustain themselves, and they need some education around that. And so I'd encourage everyone to check out that website, number one, and number two, build that plan so you can begin to save and hopefully become homeowners.
But with that said, and this is something, you know, that I'm sure you know very, very well, that the mayor's plan to build shelters in every ward has received a great deal of pushback. Not in my backyard. Hey, why did you give me the side eye?
Because, I wouldn't give you the side eye.
That's a reality.
I think
it's not just a DC problem, obviously, right. But certainly everyone knows that there is a problem here. You know, it's debatable whether or not it's growing or not. But the reality is that when you have people like Legrette, who you said we don't have people sleeping in buses or sleeping in McDonald's, but Legrette is in her car. And, you know, that so I find that a little difficult to, you know, to address. And because certainly this is, as you know better than I, a very complex issue.
No doubt it's a complex issue. So you start out in talking about how difficult it is to site programs to provide these services. And that is true. And the mayor has made a commitment that this is a problem that the city cares about solving. When you talk to residents in every single ward of the city, They say they want the mayor to close DC General, that they want us to advance our efforts and see success in ending homelessness. And we need all 8 wards of the city to participate in that. And there are people in every single ward in the city who I hear from all of the time who want to know how they can be part of the solution, how they can help, and who are welcoming. Now, the loudest voices, of course, are the people who are angry and the people who don't want it in their neighborhood for one reason or another, but they are not the only voices. And I would argue they may not even be the majority of the voices. So I have been incredibly touched by the number of people who in those community meetings say, I want to know how I can be involved. I want to know how I can help. Now, I'm not saying that nobody ever spends a night outside, but I can tell you that we have the system in place to help every person who is informed about how to access that help. So when we reach our goals around ending homelessness, it means that homelessness is rare because we've been able to prevent it more frequently. It is brief because when someone experiences an episode of homelessness, we're quickly connecting them to the resources they need to move back into a permanent setting. And it's non-recurring because they have the tools they need to be able to stay there. And we have data and measure. So it's actually not a matter of opinion. It might be a matter of perception.
Okay.
But our data shows that homelessness is down, and that's undebatable.
And I think to that point, you know, perception is often considered, you know, reality. And, you know, your average person working on the street who is not, the average person walking on the street doesn't have the data. Mm-hmm. They can only speak to what they, you know, what they see, whether it's coming to their mm-hmm. communities or whether, you know, it's coming up to their cars when they're at a stoplight or something like that. And so, like I said, the perception is just as important as the data, I would argue.
Sure.
Let me go back to the phone call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. David calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, David. What's on your mind?
I have been on this so-called list for 14 years now, okay? Back when my health was good, I was just looking for affordable housing. Now my health is bad. I'm back on the street again. And now you guys are giving out falsified dates. Last time I called to check in was how long has it been? And can they tell me how long would it be? They tell me that I have only been on this since 2012. I have been on this list since my son was 6 years old.
Let me stop you right there, David. What list is he talking about?
I think you might be talking about the D.C. Housing Authority's wait list for affordable housing for project-based or Section 8 subsidies. And so that would, unfortunately, that's not a question I'm equipped to answer. It's a question for the Housing Authority. But if you're living on the streets or you don't have a place to stay and you're sick and you need help, then there are places that you can go who can support with that.
Okay. David, thank you so much for your phone call. Good luck to you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Louisa calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Louisa. What's on your mind? Hi.
Hi. I'm calling. I was actually in the – I went through Virginia Williams about 3 years ago. And I was in D.C. General. And my, I went through the whole process and program. My question is, when someone goes through the program and goes through, you know, the shelter or wherever you all place them and get hooked up with a new program, you know, to help them stay in housing, what do you know if they are training, you know, the social workers or what are they teaching, you know, the people that are to assist them of how to deal with the people that are coming out of shelter? It's a lot to do, you know, more than not having a job. And sometimes it's mental health. Sometimes it's, you know, needing help learning how to budget and different things. So do you know if there are any programs being set up for things like that? It's a lot more than just not having a job, because I've been working since I've been 15 years old. But it's like, you know, a lot of our callers said, it's so expensive in the district. And now with the change in, you know,
Louisa, let me see if Ms. Snowden can at least attempt to address your question.
Yeah, and the director should also jump in as well. I think we have a number of programs, and I think you are absolutely right to point out that there's not one issue that we must address as we address this issue around homelessness. And the fact is, a number of these issues we have to address for residents who aren't homeless as well. One, we have to help our residents better engage on the issue of financial fitness. And that's why we created the website and the program around it. We've also launched home buyers clubs, and particularly east of the river, that will help district residents, longtime district residents, purchase homes east of the river. But there are other things that we've done as well. There are financial literacy programs that exist within the D.C. General Program. CAB, an organization that we work a lot with, has a program that they run right out of there. They also do that at the Department of Employment Services with our folks who are accessing our training portals and training programs. The other things that we're focused on, though, is making sure that we're, again, connecting all of the agencies that we need to, including the Department of Behavioral Health and the Department of Health, to ensure that we are meeting all of the needs of residents. But I think this is a place where Director Zeilinger can actually speak.
Yeah, I think that's really the role of the case managers, and we are equipping them with the tools. Their job is to assess what is needed and make the connections. And even as people are no longer relying on us for case management as they're in permanent housing, they should be doing there's probably a lot more we can and we are doing to make sure that when people experience a problem and they're no longer in services, to know where to go and how to and who to call in order to get that help. So the Virginia Williams Family Resource Center is not only our intake and eligibility for shelter, but it is a place where families can come, where we can make those connections to the array of different services that are there and available for families, no matter what that is. So we help with child care there. We have Department of Behavioral Health co-located. We have our domestic violence provider, DASH, co-located with us at Virginia Williams, the schools, the housing authority. So we really, our goal is to really make sure that whatever it is that's going on that is impacting a family, we can be that connector and create those linkages.
I would just add that to the director's point and Louisa's question, in fact, as well, we do that on the workforce side, too, where we provide wraparound services. So this is the other thing that I think is new and innovative about the work we've been doing in this administration. We're not just trying to solve the specific problem that someone comes to us with. We're working to solve all the ancillary problems and challenges that they face as well. And that includes developing in many agencies across the government a program of wraparound services to best support that individual reach their goal. Be it a job or housing.
Louisa, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to ask you about the number that was mentioned in the Washington Post article about some $80,000 a day to pay for hotel stays. I find that eye-popping.
It is eye-popping.
And a day.
Yes.
And so what, obviously, that's not a sustainable practice.
That's not a sustainable practice at all, nor is that our long-term strategy. But in order to be able to reform our system, there are a few things we had to do. One is we had to be able to help families year-round. And the reason why that's important is this, that we also launched a very robust prevention initiative that I talked to you a little bit about. And oftentimes that involves people returning back to a situation where they've had a conflict with a family member and they're not sure if it's going to work out. We want to be able to support them to make that situation work. But if it doesn't work, they need to have a safe place they can go. So when there is a right to shelter here in the wintertime, and we're offering somebody something other than shelter, they need to know that if that something doesn't work and it's warm outside, they're still going to have a safe place where they can lay their kids that night. And so in order for those reforms to work, for us to be able to prevent more families from needing shelter, for us to be able to successfully help families exit and stay out of the system, we needed each of those reforms to work for each component. Now, as I told you, we've got 20% fewer families in shelter than we did this time last year. And we expect that decline to continue steadily. We don't expect to be relying on overflow by the year 2020 and to have very little need for overflow in 2019. But these are the investments in the systems change that is going to make this the real solution sustainable.
I want to ask you a little bit more about that on the other side of this break, but lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about D.C.'s homeless issue. Brian, calling from D.C., we're going to talk to you on the other side of the break. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about D.C.'s homeless issue. Let me go back to the phone lines. Brian calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Brian. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Mr. Fisher. It's my first time I ever called you, man. I just wanted to tell you I appreciate everything you do, and I'm going to try to be brief, but I have a couple of comments. I work for the Department of Mental Health for the last 23 years. And she talked about this Virginia Williams system. First of all, they need to teach some people how to talk to people, first and foremost. I have took clients up there on a personal basis. And we went through the whole process. And then when they ask you for a letter or a proof that you're homeless, a person is homeless. How can you get proof? I don't understand that. And my second comment is that, you understand, now the Department of Mental Health, give these people $700 a month and tell them to go out and find an apartment. There's no way in Washington, D.C. you can find a room for that much. Basically, you probably can get a room for $700, but to finally get a one-bedroom. And I'm saying, I've been doing this for 23 years. And every year, man, they talk about what they're doing, what they're doing. The people are not properly trained. They talk to the clients like they, you know, they left then. And then they have attitude because they come to get the help you say coming to get. And then when they go through the whole process, if you can't prove that you are homeless, you know, they just kick your stuff off the system.
Well, Brian, let me see if Ms. Zeilinger can address your issue. That's an interesting point. I didn't know. Do they ask people to, how do you prove that you're homeless?
So it's actually, some people would say that it's, we're too permissive in the way that we ask people to demonstrate homelessness. So given you talked about the $80,000 a day in mm-hmm. overflow motels, it is very expensive to provide shelter to families. And so, and we want to make sure that we're housing people who have no other options, who need that safety, not people who think this is the shortcut to an affordable housing voucher, or who may just need help navigating the situation they're in, but shelter is not the right solution for them. And so to do that, we go through an intake and an eligibility. We ask people, where did you stay last night? Where have you been living? And why can you not stay there anymore? And we go from there based on what it is. We also try to assure them. And we have, I don't know when was the last time that Brian, you were at the Virginia Williams Family Resource Center, but we have, this was a contract function until this October. And the Department.
What does that mean?
It means that the Department of Human Services, through our management contract, had a subcontractor who was running the operations of eligibility. We felt like that was not a function that we wanted delegated to a subcontractor, but that was our responsibility. And if we were going to change the culture of intake and the way we're supporting families, it's really an inherent function that should be the Department of Human Services to perform directly.
So that's the way it is now?
So since October 1st, it has been my staff from the department who are the frontline workers, and we have changed our process, and we have tried to assure, and our policy is that first and foremost, we let families know we want to make sure you have a safe place to be tonight, and we want to understand why you're coming and what we have available that is going to best support you to solve the crisis that you're in, and we go from there. Now, we have verification that we need around residency to make sure that they are, you know, they're, that we're providing services to the extent to which the law is the way it's defined in law, are residents of the district. So we're looking at, are you receiving public benefits in the district or in another state? Are your children enrolled in DCPS or school here locally? Where was the last place that you lived? And so if somebody had a lease here in the district, they've been evicted. Very clear. You know, that's one way that people show documentation. They may say, I've been staying with this person. I can no longer stay there. Then we want to understand what that's about. If there's violence going on, then we have we're dealing with that as we would appropriately a situation that ensures safety. We're not.
But with that said, because of the way that the district government addresses homelessness, in other words, not turning anyone away, I'm quite sure that there are many people who know that do not live here, and they may be coming from out of state. So how do you address those people that are looking for help, looking for shelter, and they say, well, I can go to D.C. if I can't get it in West Virginia, or I can't get it in Pennsylvania or some other place?
So our law has some limitations on that, and we've asked, we have a legislative proposal that we introduced last fall that council didn't take up. We will be introducing it again in just a couple weeks that helps us get a little bit clearer using similar criteria that one would use at the DMV or DCPS to demonstrate residency. We do look, one of the things that probably is most conclusive is where people, if they have school-aged children, where their children are enrolled, and where they're receiving public benefits.
But what happens to them if they come?
So if you're coming to me from another jurisdiction, and it's clear, and people come here from other places because they believe they can't get the help they need where they're from.
Right.
But people generally want to keep their kids in their same school, and they want to be able to get that help. Sometimes they may have gone to one program, but there may be other resources there. So we are sometimes getting on the phone with our partners in other jurisdictions and saying, I have a family in front of me from your county who is in need of homeless services, and how can we refer them so they can get their needs met? They would like to be able to go home. Now, sometimes people feel like they're not going to get what they want, and they've pulled their kids out of school, they've canceled their benefits in their state, and they're applying for benefits here, and they say, my intent is to become a district resident and stay in the district at that point. They they may have stayed with somebody, with a friend or someone here, and at that point they're doing the things that they would need to do to qualify as a district resident, and our current law has us then serving them in that way.
All right, I just want to be clear because you said a mouthful there.
Sure.
So if someone comes from a place where they're not getting services, if they are a resident of some other state and they come to D.C. and they say, yes, that they intend to become a resident of the district, but by the very nature of the term resident, if they are homeless, they have no residency. So I guess I just want to be clear.
They're
still helped to stay here.
That's correct. They are.
Okay. Brian, thank you so much for your phone call. Ms. Snowden, I know you spoke about, you know, a lot of the programs and educating, you know, people that are in crisis so that they can have kind of a financial foundation. And I think that's wonderful. But the thing that I want to at least ask you about is the happening now, and I don't think we drilled down enough on that. Until such time as those shelters and facilities are built in the 8 wards, what is the mayor's position about making D.C. more affordable? Because that really is the issue.
I completely agree. Sure. And the mayor does, too, in fact, and has worked incredibly hard. She ran on these issues and continues to work to ensure that D.C. can be affordable. She's done that by putting $100 million in the Housing Production Trust Fund every single year. She will continue to do that as long as she's mayor.
And what's going to happen with that money?
To ensure that we can build and retain affordable housing, right? So she's worked incredibly hard to make sure that apartment buildings that are coming up on their covenants, affordable housing covenants, that we can hold on to those units, right? And that's really important. We're also working incredibly hard to make sure that we grow affordable housing units. And so when we talk about the cranes going up across the city in many wards across the city, all 8 wards, that's really focused on building affordable housing for district residents. So that's one piece. Two, creating my position was a big piece of it, creating the new deputy mayor for greater economic opportunity to elevate the focus on ensuring that we are putting people on the pathway to the middle class. Now, we say that a lot, but what we mean by that is making sure that we're connecting people to real economic opportunity that allows them to sustain themselves. Before, we had a series of programs that existed in different agencies that might touch someone on workforce. Now we have a comprehensive workforce system that connects individuals who are interested in training, paid education, to real paid job opportunities at the same time. And we're really proud of that. We have a program that many people in the city know called Project Empowerment that had been focused on returning citizens and helping to connect them to subsidized and then unsubsidized employment. Very, very high success rate. 74% of those folks get into that program, end up in long-term full-time employment. We have taken that model and replicated it for all of our populations that experience some barriers to employment, including the homeless population. And what we've been able to do is see more and more district residents get high-quality employment opportunities that allow them to sustain themselves and take advantage of all that affordable housing that we're building.
That's right. And I would say that that contextual learning is really a best practice in the country, that that is one of the most important solutions, that when people have to choose between getting the training they need to qualify for a job that's going to allow them to earn a living wage or having a job at all, they oftentimes they have to work. And they're not able to make change for themselves. We know it was pointed out earlier in the conversation, just the lowest paying jobs are not going to help people lift themselves out of poverty. That is not a pathway to the middle class. So these contextual learning opportunities where people can earn and learn and get and continue to qualify to compete in the job market here, which is robust and growing, is really the path forward. And the attention and dedication and coordination across agencies to really create meaningful pathways to those to that is something that is, I think, incredibly exciting and one of the most game-changing things we can be doing.
Back to my point, Ms. Snowden, though, about housing.
Yeah.
Can this administration or future administrations and future Courtney Snowdens be in positions where the district can build enough for people to live at a reasonable price? But, you know, particularly with the onset of gentrification and cranes going up and all of that other stuff?
Yeah. So I think we have to have a concerted strategy around affordable housing, and we have that in the district. And the mayor's been really committed to ensuring that we have a strategy that maximizes the use of tax dollars to build affordable housing for district residents. But here's what I'll say, and I think too often we focus on one piece of the pie. And the reality is, if we get people into high quality, good paying, sustainable jobs, I got kids who don't have college degrees but enroll in a program called the Hope Project, they can make anywhere from $45,000 to $115,000 working in IT, right? Well, those folks, they can afford to be in the District of Columbia at a number of ranges.
I'm very familiar with Mr. Bell and the Hope Project, and certainly there needs to be more of that as well.
And we have a lot more. We've really invested in trainings like that. That's a big difference that we've made in this administration. We are focused on supporting programs that get people connected to jobs, that put them squarely in the middle class, so that the district can continue to rely on the fantastic longtime residents like you and me who've been here for a really long time, and so they can stay here and sustain themselves and their families right here in the district.
Courtney Snowden, Laura Zeilinger. Boy, I tell you, that is a mouthful. I'm going to get it right. Laura Zeilinger, thank you both so much for coming in. I appreciate it. And again, good luck to both of you.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, April 20th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can follow me on Twitter at Daily Drum, WHUR, or H.